Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking into a really strange one. It's a case that sits right at the intersection of, well, time, personal identity, and maybe even architecture itself holding memory.
That's right. We're focusing on the story surrounding a man named Leonard Clark and an incident in a hospital back in the 80s. It's one of those accounts where the past doesn't just echo, it seems to actively possess someone.
Allegedly demanding to finish a surgery that was decades old, it sounds completely bizarre.
It does. And our sources here are, well, they're a mix. We have documented medical records, you know, timelines tracking a patient's state, 6 months of silence,
then
a sudden dramatic change.
Okay, so there's a documented core to this.
Definitely. But alongside that, we have historical accounts, staff testimonies, things that describe really tangible physical evidence that supposedly surfaced.
Right. So our mission today is to follow that timeline, look at the evidence, these artifacts that were apparently found, and really explore this idea. Can a building, a hospital, actually hold on to memory or even identity?
Like data, almost. Can it imprint itself onto someone? That's the core question raised by these accounts.
And the setting seems key here. You mentioned the hospital, the idea of the hospital itself as a kind of living record.
Exactly. So let's set the scene. Imagine a small city in Appalachia, maybe a coal town feel. It's 1984, and it's raining. A cold, hard rain.
That atmosphere feels important. Damp, dark.
Heavy, yeah. The sources emphasize this. And it begins not with anything supernatural, but with something tragically ordinary. A taxi driver, Leonard Clark, crashes his cab.
Just a regular guy living his life?
Completely. Until that moment. He's rushed to the local hospital, the main one for the area, and crucially, an old one. Been there a long time.
Okay, and the medical record is clear about what happens next.
Yes, very clear. Leonard Clark suffers a severe head injury. He's declared to be in a deep traumatic coma. Prognosis, grave.
And he stays like that for...
quite a while.
6 months. For 6 whole months, he's on machines. His own identity, the taxi driver, the family man, it's completely suppressed. He's just there, silent. Except for maybe occasional sounds.
Right. The records mention faint murmurs, maybe distress, maybe pain. But nothing conscious, nothing coherent. He's effectively a blank slate.
Mm.
And this suppression, this vacancy, seems to be critical for what happens next, according to the narrative.
It creates an opening, maybe.
That's what the sources imply. While Leonard Clark, the taxi driver, is absent, the building itself, well, it has its own history. And this is where the 1984 record starts to blur with an older legend.
Ah, the other Leonard Clark.
Exactly. The 1940s precursor. Now, we need to be careful here, because this part of the story apparently surfaces after the taxi driver awakens. But the story goes, or maybe old hospital newsletters hinted at it. There were whispers.
Whispers about who?
About a brilliant, but apparently very severe head surgeon, worked at that same hospital during World War II, so roughly 39 to 45. And his name?
Dr. Leonard Clark.
Dr. Leonard Clark. And the sources don't just say he was a surgeon. They paint a picture of someone intense, authoritative, operating under immense pressure, wartime conditions in a regional hospital.
So not just a name, but a strong personality associated with it.
A very strong personality tied to that specific place during a period of intense activity. And this leads us straight to that theme, memory etched into the place itself.
Why this hospital? What makes it special?
Well, think about what a hospital is, especially an old one. It's a site of constant high-stakes emotion, isn't it? Fear, relief, intense concentration, trauma, life, death, day in, day out.
The sheer volume of intense experience.
Exactly. Decades of it. The same rooms, the same procedures, the same crises playing out over and over. Our sources suggest all that. Energy, that psychic weight, it doesn't just vanish. It settles.
Into the walls.
Sort of, yeah. Creating what some call a palimpsest. You know, like an old manuscript where they scraped off the original writing, but you can still faintly see it under the new text.
Okay, I see. So time layers itself onto the building.
Like layers of plaster. And the original layer, the intense identity of Dr. Clark, the surgeon, was still there, dormant, just waiting.
Waiting for the right conditions. Which, in this case, was the catastrophic injury to the other Leonard Clark.
The sources propose exactly that link. The trauma created the vulnerability.
Okay, so 6 months pass. The taxi driver is silent. Then what?
Then, suddenly, it ends. Leonard Clark awakens. But it's not a gentle return. It's immediate and transformative.
Not what the staff would expect. They'd anticipate confusion, grogginess.
Right. Maybe panic, slurred speech. Instead, the man who sits up is, yes, disoriented for a moment.
Yeah.
But almost instantly, he's described as strangely confident.
Confident. After 6 months in a coma, that's unsettling.
Deeply unsettling for the staff. His whole demeanor shifts. His posture. the look in his eyes. It's focused, intense.
And this confidence comes out in how he speaks.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And in very specific professional language. This is the turning point for the staff. They go from treating a coma patient to witnessing, well, something else entirely.
His first words, what were they?
This is the quote that apparently just stops everyone cold. He doesn't say, "Where am I?" He doesn't ask what happened. His first clear sentence is a command, "Prepare the patient for surgery."
Wow. Just like that.
Just like that. Precise. Authoritative. The language of an operating room. Delivered like he's in charge.
How did the nurses react? Laughter. Confusion.
Initially. Yeah, probably nervous disbelief. Maybe some awkward laughter, thinking he's just deeply confused, delusional from the trauma. But that apparently faded fast.
Why?
Because of the certainty in his voice. The absolute conviction. And he didn't just talk. He moved.
Moved how?
With purpose. He gets off the ward, starts walking down the hall.
Mm.
And the sources stress this. He navigates the hospital like he owns the place. Like someone who knows every turn, every shortcut.
Even though the hospital might have changed since the 40s. New signs, different layouts.
Exactly. He's moving like staff.
Yep.
Ignoring modern signage. Heading somewhere specific. It's not just words. It's spatial memory. He's not asking where the OR is. He's going there.
Following a 40-year-old map in his head.
That's the implication. The taxi driver's body, but the surgeon's internal GPS tied to this building. The cognitive dissonance for the staff must have been just huge. And it was about to escalate.
Because he reaches the operating room.
He walks straight into one.
Yeah.
An active OR, or one being prepped. Zero authorization, obviously. But he acts like he belongs there, like he's the chief.
And what does he do? Just stand there?
No. He doesn't hesitate. He goes straight for the instrument table. Picks up a scalpel.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's crossing a line.
A huge line. And then he starts giving orders. Precise medical instructions.
What kind of instructions?
The sources say things like calling for specific retractors, certain types of sutures, even detailing incision techniques. Things a taxi driver would have absolutely no way of knowing. Maybe even using terms that were more common back in the 40s.
So the actual surgical team, they must have just frozen.
Completely. Here's this guy. Minutes out of a coma, holding a scalpel, talking like a seasoned surgeon. The real staff, the doctors, residents, they intervene immediately.
Telling him to stop. Put the scalpel down.
Yeah, the lead surgeon basically says, "Sir, put that down." Firmly, defensively.
And how does Clark react to being challenged?
Apparently, with anger.
Mm-hmm.
The skepticism, the interruption, it infuriates the persona that's taken over. And this is when he makes the claim. The one that changes everything.
What does he say?
He insists, flat out, that he is the authority there. He claims he had been the head surgeon there since 1943.
Since 1943. Not just a doctor, but the head surgeon specifically tied to that date.
Exactly. Claiming seniority, history, ownership of that space going back decades. And while he's arguing, he apparently looks around the modern OR, the new lights, the equipment,
and
dismisses it with this chilling calmness. He just remarks that they had redecorated.
Redecorated. Like the 40s OR is the real one in his mind, and this is just a minor update.
Precisely. The surgeon's reality is dominant. But okay, let's pause here. The staff must still be thinking profound delusion right now. Why not just sedate him?
That's what I was wondering. The surgical knowledge is weird, but the claim itself is so wild.
It is wild. And they certainly would have considered him delusional. But the specificity of the knowledge, the procedural commands, combined with that absolute certainty, it must have created a moment of hesitation. A how does he know that kind of question.
And the family confirms later he had no medical training.
Absolutely none. Never went to med school. No interest in it. Total contradiction.
So the staff are confused, trying to handle this impossible situation. What does Clark do next? Does he back down?
No. He seems to realize they don't believe him. That the words aren't enough. He needs proof. Tangible proof.
Proof of what? Being a surgeon from 40 years ago. How?
He seems to know exactly how. He needs an artifact. Something physical from that time, hidden within the building itself.
Hidden where?
He moves, aggressively, towards a specific part of the wall near the operating room. Maybe a seam, maybe just a spot he remembered. And he starts clawing at the plaster.
With his hands?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ripping away the modern surface. It's a forceful act. Mm-hmm. Like he's making the building give up its secret. Revealing the older layer beneath.
God, the tension in that room must have been unbelievable. Everyone just watching him tear at the wall.
Silence, you'd imagine. Just the sound of plaster cracking, falling away.
Yeah.
And then he finds it. Behind the wall. In the gap he's created.
Finds what?
Something wrapped in old, brittle cloth.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls it out. It's an old, rusted scalpel.
A scalpel? hidden in the wall.
Old, clearly neglected, stained by time, shocking enough on its own, but that's not the real proof.
There is more.
Oh, yeah. This is the detail that, according to the sources, shifts everything. They carefully unwrap the cloth, and on the handle, there's an engraving.
Let me guess.
Clear as day.
Huh?
Dr. Leonard Clark, 1943.
Wow. Okay. That is concrete. That's not delusion. That's physical evidence.
Exactly. It connects the man standing there, the awakened taxi driver, directly to the identity and the specific year he claimed.
Mm.
40 years bridged by a rusted piece of metal hidden in the wall.
How did the staff react to that, the engraved scalpel?
Absolute silence. Stunned silence. The sources mention a nurse gasping, doctors just staring. The 40-year-old proof is right there in their hands. It validates the impossible claim.
The palimpsest idea, the building holding on to things, suddenly seems terrifyingly real.
Right. And Leonard Clark, or the surgeon persona, he sees their shock. He looks at them, the doctors, the nurses, and delivers this line, soft, almost matter-of-fact, "You've redecorated, but the ghosts are still here."
Chilling. Absolutely chilling. It's like he's saying, "See? I told you."
It perfectly captures it. You can change the surface, but the underlying history, the ghosts, they remain. Sealed in the architecture.
But he wasn't done yet, was he? The scalpel was just the first piece.
Not even close. He then leads them on a tour. The staff, now probably silent, unnerved, maybe a bit scared, follow him away from the modern ORs.
Where does he take them?
Down stairwells, into less used parts of the hospital, ending up in a basement landing. He leads them to a specific door, a locked door.
And this door, it wasn't familiar to the current staff.
Not at all. Later, they apparently learned it wasn't on any current hospital maps or floor plans. Nobody working there in 1984 remembered it ever being used. It was a forgotten space.
Redacted by the hospital itself, maybe?
Or just fallen out of use and sealed off.
Yeah.
But he knew it. And he knew how to open it.
He had a key.
He knew where the key was. He goes to a specific floor tile near the door. It's loose. He lifts it, reaches under, and pulls out an old tarnished key.
Another piece of intimate hidden knowledge of the building's structure from decades ago.
Precisely. Proving his connection wasn't just theoretical. He puts the key in the lock, turns it. The sources describe the door groaning open, protesting after being sealed for so long.
And what was behind the door?
A time capsule. A completely preserved, utterly forgotten surgical wing from the past. Dusty. Silent.
Oh, what did it look like? What kind of details?
Think thick dust on everything. Old gurneys draped in canvas, glass cabinets filled with jars, maybe old specimens or expired supplies, chalkboards still showing faded surgical schedules from who knows when, cracked tile floors, the air thick with the smell of decay and old antiseptic.
Wow. An entire section of the hospital just frozen in time.
Representing the era of Dr. Clark. The physical space matching the identity that had resurfaced. It's the surgeon's world, sealed off.
And was there a final confirmation, something that definitively linked this Dr. Clark to that wing?
There was. Hanging on the wall, askew, covered in dust. A black and white photograph looked like a founder's photo or maybe the key staff from that era.
In one of the faces.
One of the figures in the photo. A stern-looking man, presumably the surgeon, underneath his image. Clearly legible was the name. Dr. Leonard Clark.
There it is. The man in the photo, the name on the scalpel, the name of the patient, the knowledge of the hidden wing, it all lines up.
Undeniably. The wing itself suggests the hospital, for whatever reason, tried to bury that part of its past. Maybe the wartime work was too intense, too traumatic, but the building held on to it. And the only way back in was through the resurrected identity.
So the identity bleed wasn't just words or an object, it was an architectural key. He unlocked the building's memory. What happens after this? How does the hospital handle finding a secret, potentially hazardous 40-year-old surgical wing?
Predictably, the administration moved fast. Safety concerns, liability, you name it. They sealed the wing back up immediately. Properly this time, maybe reinforced steel, making sure it was truly inaccessible.
And the official story. What about the records of the 1940s Dr. Clark?
Conveniently, the records were deemed inconclusive or classified. Essentially swept under the rug, put the ghost back in the wall, locked the door tighter.
And the patient. Leonard Clark, the taxi driver.
He remained profoundly unstable. His family, remember, confirmed he had zero medical training. Zero. Which just deepened the mystery of how he knew what he knew, how he could do what he did.
Did he stay as the surgeon?
It wasn't stable. The sources describe him alternating. Moments of his original self, confused, lost. And then these sudden, sharp returns of the surgeon persona described as eerie surgical competence, the past identity fighting for control.
That must have been terrifying for everyone around him and the staff. They witnessed all this. Did the story just disappear?
Oh no, of course not. It became the new hospital legend, but this time built on witnessed events and physical proof. Staff started whispering new stories.
Like what?
Anecdotes about hearing him in his room at night, calling out complex incision names in his sleep, murmuring details of surgical procedures that hadn't been used in decades.
Wow, still accessing that knowledge even unconsciously.
And maybe the most chilling detail involved the hospital technicians. There were stories circulating that he'd sometimes give him instructions
Instructions for what?
on where to find a specific switch or a control on a piece of equipment, a switch that belonged to the original 1940s machinery in that forgotten wing, a switch that didn't physically exist on the modern 1984 equipment.
So he's accessing the memory of the old tech, overlaying it onto the present. He's seeing the ghost equipment.
That's the implication. The identity bleed was so complete it was overriding the physical reality in front of him, accessing the old blueprints, the old tools, ignoring the updates.
Okay, so this whole incident, the awakening, the scalpel, the wing, it forces some big questions. What are the main theories the sources offer to explain this?
Right, the sources basically point towards three main possibilities, each with different implications.
Let's take them one by one. The first, maybe the most out there, is reincarnation.
Yeah, the idea of a direct soul transfer. The trauma of the crash made the taxi driver's body an empty vessel, and the waiting identity of the original Dr. Clark just moved in. The argument for this is the completeness of the takeover. He wasn't learning, he was the surgeon instantly. A total identity swap.
Okay, what's the second idea? We touched on this. Identity bleed.
This one's a bit different. Less about a soul swap, more like leeching. The taxi driver's identity is suppressed by the coma, creating a vacuum. The hospital itself, soaked in the intense history and psychic energy of the surgeon's work, essentially uploads that archived persona into the vulnerable mind.
So the building acts as the source of the identity.
In this theory, yes. The brain injury makes him receptive, and the building provides the data. It bleeds its past into him.
Which leads directly to the third idea, the foundation for the bleed theory, the hospital as a palimpsest.
Exactly. This theory posits that the building itself stores information, not just emotionally, but maybe in some way we don't understand. The intense trauma, the concentration in that WWII surgical wing, it generated, let's call it data, residual energy, memory,
Yeah.
physically held in the structure, the plaster, the tiles, the foundations.
And Leonard Clark's injury just let him access the building's hard drive, basically.
That's the metaphor, yeah. And the proof for this model is the physical journey. He didn't just remember things. The building guided him to the scalpel's hiding place, to the key under the tile, to the sealed wing itself. The structure was the vector. The surgeon's identity was a feature of the building, made manifest in the man.
That's a deeply unsettling thought. If it happened once.
Could it happen again?
Yeah.
If the memory is latent in the structure, is it just waiting for the next vulnerable mind? That's the terrifying implication.
So, summing up, we have this incredible physical evidence, the engraved scalpel, the photo in the sealed wing, all validating the existence of the 1943 surgeon and showing how fragile our own identity might be in the face of such a strong place-based memory.
The hospital tried to bury its history, literally seal it away, but the history found a way out. You used a living person to force itself back into the present.
And even though the wing is sealed again, the evidence locked away, the physical scar remains. You mentioned the wall near the OR.
Right, where the scalpel was hidden. They patched it up, of course, but it leaves a blank spot. A newer piece of plaster on an old wall.
And the sources end on that image, don't they? Focusing on that patch.
They do. They ask you to imagine a nurse, maybe late at night, walking those corridors. Quieter then. She pauses by that spot on the wall, that smooth, blank patch.
And maybe she hears something, or thinks she does.
Exactly. A whisper. Faint, maybe just imagination, maybe the building sighing. But echoing the first demand that started it all, that single sharp word, scalpel.
Is the structure really quiet now, or is that memory just dormant again, waiting? Waiting for someone else to provide an opening, waiting for the surgeon to be needed again.
Can you ever truly erase something once it's proven it can come back? The building remembers.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. It certainly makes you wonder what memories are hidden just beneath the surface, behind the locked doors, in the places we walk through every single day. Until next time, stay curious.